Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, May 23rd. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, stormwater sampling effort in Eureka reveals high concentration of salmon-killing toxins. Fortuna's scary budget prompts new tax measure. And breaking ground, Wiyot Tribe's Juruji youth housing is underway. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. A recent stormwater sampling effort in Eureka revealed a troubling trend in area parking lots. Even in period of relatively light rain, high concentrations of salmon-killing toxin compounds are being flushed directly into local creeks in Humboldt Bay. Humboldt Waterkeeper's GIS and policy analyst Sylvia Van Royen had this to say.
So 6-PPDQ is a toxic transformation product of a anti-wear chemical that's added to tires, 6-PPD. So when our tires create friction against the road, they generate little tiny tire wear particles, and then rain comes along and washes those tire wear particles into our stormwater drains and then drains out into our local waterways. When 6-PPD in those tire wear particles is exposed to ozone in the air, it transforms into 6-PPDQ, which recently was identified as being very toxic to salmon, especially coho salmon.
Some of these samples were collected at the Eureka Costco and Target parking lots, as well as Cal Poly Humboldt. Caltrans and the Department of Toxic Substances Control gave an in-depth presentation to the State Water Resources Control Board in December of 2024 about the dangers of 6-PPDQ to humans and wildlife. Caltrans pointed to bioswales as a proven treatment option for reducing toxic runoff. Van Royen explains more of how these bioswales work.
Okay, so a bioswale is essentially a vegetated stormwater drain. The vegetation and soil captures pollutants as the stormwater drains through it. So then cleaner stormwater ends up running off into our streams.
Runoff from impermeable surfaces like parking lots is a major contributor to water pollution. California Coastkeeper Alliance, of which Humboldt Waterkeeper is a member, is sponsoring AB 1313 to help address this concern by requiring the State Water Resource Control Board to create a statewide commercial, industrial, and institutional stormwater permit. This is how Humboldt Waterkeeper is moving forward with its plans.
So right now the Department of Toxic Substances Control is working with tire manufacturers to identify alternatives to 6-PPD. They're looking into more chemicals like 7-PPD, which, you know, could be just as toxic. We don't know yet. Right now what we think the best mode of action is to just put in bioswales and treat stormwater runoff now, because it's the most immediate way we can start reducing that pollutant running off into streams. Mm-hmm.
The Humboldt Bay area is relatively rural, and its tributaries provide important habitat for juvenile coho salmon. Removing toxins like 6-PPDQ from area streams would improve water quality for area residents, as well as for struggling salmonoids. These recent water samples point to the need for more study, as the Caltrans's current assumptions likely underestimate the impact of this chemical on streams even in relatively rural areas. Fortuna will seek voter approval of a new sales tax to address its serious budget shortfalls. Daniel Mintz reports.
Dealing with a budget with more costs than income and high employee turnover due to poor pay, Fortuna is pursuing a new tax measure for the 2026 election. The City Council revisited revenue generation options at its May 19th meeting, and a majority of its members supported putting a new tax to voters to prevent painful cuts and selling assets like the Fortuna River Lodge. City Manager Amy Nilsson said estimated budget revenue for the coming fiscal year is about $8 million, a 2% increase from the current year. But sales tax revenue declined by $31,500, and costs rose more than revenue did. Nilsson told the council, quote, "Expenses are outpacing revenue by $235,000. With employee salaries flatlined as a result, Nilsson talked about the consequences.
So we've seen an increase in turnover. We are estimating that at the end of fiscal year, we will lose 25 full-time staff, or 30%, and 28 part-time staff, which is a total turnover percentage of almost 50%. We did receive a resignation this morning of a very key full-time employee who will be leaving the agency and is partially leaving for more money. So there's costly impacts to turnover. It's costly to hire. There's recruiting, there's onboarding, there's training. There's a loss of expertise, there's decreased productivity, there's morale issues for the remaining staff who have to pick up for those vacant positions and do those job duties. There's also service disruptions.
To make working for Fortuna viable, salaries and benefits will have to increase by 20%, a $1 million spending hike. Without revenue to make up for it, cuts would be needed. If public safety positions are spared, there'll be deep cuts, such as eliminating recreation programs. Sale of the Fortuna River Lodge would also be necessary. Another scenario presented by Nilsen included a $450,000 cut to the police department's patrol staff. Alternatively, a new sales tax could raise the money. Before the council was a recommendation from an ad hoc committee to hire a consultant for polling voters on tax measure options. Councilmember Tammy Trent, a member of the committee, vouched for doing that.
This is kind of scary. $37,000 is a lot of money, but I think it's worth the risk to invest that to hopefully get everything in line to get our tax measure passed. We need to see whether it's going to be, people want a specific public safety tax, but the last tax measure, when I was talking to people, that's what they wanted. So we need to find out whether it's going to be a specific tax or a general tax. So polling will help give us those ideas to get everything in line to give the community what they want, what they need. We also need to get the word out. They need to see this. They need to see what we just saw here on what it'll look like if we don't get money.
Trent concluded by saying, quote, "We have to go out for a tax measure. We don't have a choice. We have to do it." During a public comment period, County Supervisor Michelle Bushnell said polling has contributed to the county's success in passing its sales tax measures.
Our measure O that just passed, which is the transit and road tax, we would not have gotten that without that information. We were going in a totally different direction before the polling went out. Also, I want to say that selling the River Lodge, that is an income generator for you guys, and it's one-time monies that you would get from selling it. That does not cure your problem. Your problem is years and years of needing to have income come in. A one-time sale of a building that you can generate funds from is not going to fix your guys' solutions. I really, really urge the council to do this polling.
The council approved the polling expenditure, with Councilmember Ave Stevens voting against it and Councilmember Kyle Conley absent. Stevens said he's not against a sales tax measure, but is, quote, skeptical of an outside consultant being the highest likely path of success. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Wiyot Tribe has broken ground on a new youth housing project in Eureka, part of a larger effort to reclaim ancestral land and provide critical support to tribal and foster-involved youth. Lauren Schmidt reports.
Humboldt County is under a state mandate to build over 3,000 new housing units by 2027, according to its regional housing needs assessment. The vast majority of these units are designated for areas within the Wiyot Tribe's ancestral land. Seeing the dire need, the Wiyot Tribe formed Dishkama Humboldt, a community land trust focused on restoring balance to their homeland through equitable, culturally rooted development. The Wiyot Tribe recently announced a major milestone after being awarded $14 million Home Key grant funds from the California Department of Housing and Community Development for the tribe's Jaru Jiji Youth Housing Project. This initiative will convert a vacant office building and two historic Victorian homes into 39 units of safe, supportive housing for youth experiencing homelessness or housing insecurity. Michelle Vassell serves as the Wiat Tribal Administrator, the equivalent of a city manager or a county CAO. She also has a dual role as the director of the Dishkama Community Land Trust.
It's a community land trust that is unique. It is organized under tribal law instead of state law. And it's also unique because we have two sides. So we have one arm that does conservation and one arm that does affordable housing. And these things are connected because we see this as creating our mission has a lot to do with place-based building and creating housing that is basically thinking about climate change and the environment.
The goal of the Dishkama Humboldt Community Land Trust is to create livable spaces that don't come at the expense of the natural world, rethinking the possibilities of housing without clear-cutting forests or building sprawling subdivisions. Instead, they focus on repurposing areas that have already been developed, including underused buildings and existing infrastructure. Their motto, Restoring Balance by Restoring Wiat Land, is the ethos of the project.
Our land trust is named Dishkama, in Tlaloc means love, and that's what we're really about, is really investing care into this community, caring about the environment, caring about affordable housing, caring about building greenly. We incorporate all these things.
Earlier this year, the Wiat tribe announced two other major housing developments in Eureka. A new multifamily housing project at 5th and D Streets that will provide 41 apartment units, with completion expected in 2027. Additionally, a senior housing development at 6th and L Streets, offering 52 units for elders. Now, the tribe has broken ground on a third housing project, this one geared towards youth.
Yeah, so this particular project will be home to 39 youth ages 16 to 24. The idea is to provide supportive housing. Everybody has their own individual space. They have their own unit that has their own bed and have a little mini fridge, and they have, you know, kind of like a dorm room situation, but they also have the shared community space.
The Wiat tribe has decades of experience supporting young people who struggle to find stable housing in Humboldt County. These challenges are especially severe for tribal youth, populations often overlooked in statewide housing data and policy. By offering safe shelter, meals, community connection, and wraparound services, the Jaru Jiji project aims to fill a critical gap in our rural housing system.
100%. We see this a lot. We see our kids, you know, they age out of the foster care system, and there's no safety net for them. And one of the biggest things that we see, too, is that our kids get shipped out of the area. So they're going to San Francisco, they're going to Santa Rosa, they're going to San Jose, and then they're also going to Sacramento and Bakersfield and Fresno and all these places. And if you can imagine, you're already in a situation that makes you vulnerable, and, you know, you get ripped out of your community.
According to research by the Sovereign Bodies Institute and the Yurok tribe, many cases of missing and murdered indigenous people stem from native youth disappearing while in the foster system, a critical gap the Wiat tribe hopes to address.
What ends up happening is our kids get lost. You know, they end up homeless. And if you look at the statewide housing survey, Native Americans are one of the top for our population. It's the highest homeless population in the state.
The Wiat tribe's Jaru Jiji Youth Housing Project aims to address a critical gap in housing and services in our rural community and help break the cycle perpetuated by a broken system. These affordable housing and community land buying efforts are part of a broader decolonization strategy, rooted in place-based healing. They are integral to the Land Back movement, a movement the Wiat tribe has been helping lead not only in Humboldt County, but across the country. Through partnerships with community members, funders, and government agencies, the tribe is working to return land to tribal stewardship using the community land trust model.
This idea that we are looking at the whole thing holistically, that is more of a traditional mindset instead of the siloed way of thinking. Like housing is a housing problem and food is a food problem. Like it's all together. And so is climate change in our environment. So, you know, this is a really holistic approach to addressing concerns that we have in our area.
The Wiat tribe is working to breathe new life into forgotten spaces, starting with the long vacant commercial building at 1711 3rd Street, the future site of their youth housing project. And Vassal says it's part of a broader effort to heal and reimagine Wiat ancestral land, once called Jarujiji, now known as Eureka.
We see it as like part of our responsibility. You know, we could just keep letting housing collapse and be, you know, unsafe for people to live in. Or we could do something about that housing, make more housing or better housing in that space, and not just engage in this urban sprawl of perpetually just growing and growing and growing until there's no space.
Notably, even with the Dishkama Humboldt housing projects and recent land back efforts by the city of Eureka, Caltrans, Friends of the Dunes, and others, the tribe still owns less than 1% of their ancestral land.
But we're slowly, you know, one property at a time, working towards increasing that.
The Jarujiji Youth Housing Project is expected to cost approximately $25 million. The Wiat tribe is already more than halfway towards that goal, having secured a $14 million grant. Vassal says the tribe is being strategic in pursuing additional funding to close the gap.
What we're going for these projects is not federal grants. We're going for federal home loan banks, and then we're also going for low-income housing tax credits. Sources that don't take money from the feds. It is, you know, one part strategic, but, you know, we're trying to diversify our funding sources and make sure that, you know, we can do the kinds of things that the community's asking for. Before we built these houses or before we started these projects, we spent 2 years in our community going to farmers markets, going to tribal events. You know, we were going to, you know, Arts Alive, all these different events in our area, and we were having people play what we called the housing game. And we were using that for community feedback about what our community wants and needs. And so we developed these projects based on that.
If you would like to get involved with Dishkama Humboldt, the Wiat Tribe Community Land Trust, designed to facilitate the return of Wiat ancestral lands to native stewardship, putting land in trust for the purpose of affordable housing creation, workforce development, and environmental and cultural restoration, Vassal shares how you can get involved.
A bunch of different ways. One way, you can go onto the tribe's website at www.wiat.us. Dishkama is one of the pages within that website. You can sign up for news releases and events and things like that. You'll be able to get notices about when we'll be at different events to get community engagement. You can also sign up for, as a volunteer to help us with those kinds of things. And then, of course, you can always donate. That's always an option, too.
Construction began on May 9th. More information on how to support or get involved can be found online at wiat.us. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In state news, California planning lawsuit over Senate vote to repeal California's vehicle pollution waivers. KPFA's Kennedy Cuello reports.
The U.S. Senate has repealed California's power to set its own vehicle emission standards. Democratic Senator Alex Padilla of California spoke during the Senate debate, saying that Republicans changed the rules to repeal this waiver. He calls it a power play, saying the majority overturned a decision by the Senate parliamentarian to remove the standard 60-vote majority that would be needed to reverse this waiver. He noted that California, as a state, has been directed by its residents to enact stronger environmental policies and was originally allowed to enact its own standards through the original Clean Air Act. Padilla says that this is an attack on the state.
California is being targeted for its leadership. It is that blatant, it is that obvious. Because yes, for over half a century, We've been the innovators and trailblazers in the fight against pollution. A little bit of a history refresher here. Back in 1966, California established the first tailpipe emission standard for passenger vehicles in the nation, responding to California's unique air quality needs with policy based on science and data.
In response to the decision on Capitol Hill, California officials held a press conference on how the state will respond. State Attorney General Rob Bonta said that he will file a 23rd lawsuit against the Trump administration. The lawsuit would go after the administration for using the Congressional Review Act to repeal California's waiver. He, like Padilla, says this is specifically an attack on California. He says that this lawsuit should go forward and will ensure that the state has the right to set its own standard and can enforce its own laws. He says clean air is a matter of life or death.
Despite decades of progress, tens of millions of Californians still breathe some of the worst air in the nation. And our regulations were specifically designed to combat that. It's no secret that unhealthy levels of toxic air are linked to premature death, respiratory illness, cardiovascular problems, cancer, and other serious health impacts. Striking down these vehicle programs will cost taxpayers an estimated additional $45 billion with a B dollars in health care spending.
Governor Gavin Newsom said that he anticipated this turn of events. He reminded people that in California, environmentalism is bipartisan. He cited former Republican governors Pete Wilson and Ronald Reagan, who both worked to enact environmental protections in California and nationally as well. Newsom said the Senate's action will only allow polluters to pollute more at the expense of Californians for short-term profit. He added that the state will fight against climate change.
As kids are choking up, burning up, and heating up because of climate change, we need to change. And so we are here firm in our resolve, proud of our progress, proud of being leaders, and in closing, proud of always not only having and sort of striving for audacious goals, but reaching them and exceeding them.
The Senate repealed the waiver 51-44. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
KMUD's News Sports Report for May 22nd. Ray Hamill brings us details of all of this week's big local sports stories, including all of the NCS playoff games in baseball and softball, as well as recapping the Charles Lincoln Tournament Championship games, the NCS track and field meets, and some big news out of Cal Poly Humboldt this week.
The North Coast Section baseball and softball playoffs got underway this week, and it was a good start to the postseason for the Little Four schools in particular, including the South Fork softball team. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll break down all the week's playoff action in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including a thrilling conclusion to last weekend's Charles Lincoln baseball tournament, some big changes in the air for Cal Poly Humboldt basketball, a record-setting NCS meet for the HDNL track and field athletes, where one local champion is taking his talents after graduation, and news of the Cal Poly Humboldt 2025 Athletics Hall of Fame class. But first up, it was a busy week for the local high school baseball and softball teams in the NCS playoffs. 13 league teams qualified, including two that received a top seed in their bracket. The playoffs got underway on Tuesday with six teams in action, including the Ferndale girls. The Wildcats returned to the softball playoffs for the first time in 8 years and traveled to take on Point Arena in the Division 6 bracket. And it was a successful return as the Cats won 18-8, posting their first playoff win since 2017. The South Fork girls also won their playoff opener in Division 5. The number 5 seeds in the bracket hosted number 12 Hercules and got off to a flying start, scoring 14 runs in the opening two innings on the way to a dominating 20-3 win. The Cubs, who ended a 35-year wait for a Little Four title this spring, have been one of the most successful programs in the NCS playoffs in recent years having won a section title in 3 of the last 4 seasons they've qualified. And rounding out a big week for the Little Four schools, the Hoopa Warriors, who have won more section softball titles than any other HDNL school with 7, also won their playoff opener, defeating San Domenico 9-1 in Division 6 action. The McKinleyville Panthers and Del Norte Warriors, meanwhile, received a top seed and first round bye in their softball brackets and automatically advanced to this weekend's quarterfinals, along with Ferndale, South Fork, and Hoopa. Del Norte is in Division 3, while McKinleyville is in Division 5. The Fortuna girls also were in action this week and lost their playoff opener in Division 2, falling 11-0 at Benicia. In baseball, meanwhile, just 2 of the 7 HDNL teams in action this week won their opening games. Arcata and St. Bernard's are seeded 2 and 3 in Division 5, and both successfully navigated their opening games to advance to the weekend quarterfinals. The Tigers beat Ignacio Valley 15-0, and St. Bernard's defeated Piner 3-1. The McKinleyville Panthers lost 2-1 at Amador Valley in the Division 2 bracket, giving up 2 runs in the bottom of the 7th, while the Eureka Loggers fell 12-4 to Washington in Division 3. Also in Division 3, Big 5 champion Del Norte lost 12-1 to Kelseyville, while in Division 4, Ferndale fell 9-0 at Moreau Catholic, and in Division 5, Hoopa fell 14-0 at Miramonte. Strangely, 3 of the 4 local conference champions received lower seeds than the runners-up. In other local baseball and softball news this week, last weekend's Charles Lakin tournaments served up a couple of exciting championship games. In the baseball decider, the McKinleyville Panthers claimed a second straight tournament title in thrilling fashion when senior Colby Stolpe drove in teammate Bryce Sargent for a walk-off victory, capping a 2-run rally in the bottom of the 7th to edge the Eureka Loggers 4-3. The Fortuna girls, meanwhile, claimed their first Lakin softball tournament championship in 8 years with a come-from-behind 6-4 win over McKinleyville. The Huskies trailed by 3 going into the 6th inning, but would score 6 late runs to pull out the victory. Senior Fate Helms had a crucial bases-clearing double to help key the late rally and secure the tournament championship. Elsewhere in local sports this week, Cal Poly Humboldt men's basketball head coach Chris Tift announced that he is leaving the program to take over as head coach of the Cal State San Bernardino men's team. Tift was with the Jacks for just 2 years, but appeared to be building some momentum with a big season this past winter, leading them to a first winning season since 2019 and their first playoff victory since 2016. In local high school track and field, meanwhile, it was another record-setting week for the fastest athlete in HDNL history. Some of the best big school athletes from the North Coast section traveled to Fortuna High School for the Redwood Empire Championships on Saturday, and several local athletes impressed, none more so than Del Norte junior Deacon Hanks. Just 1 week after breaking his own league record in the boys' 100 meters, Hanks did it again, crossing the finish line in first place with a time of 10.57 seconds and knocking 0.13 seconds off his previous record. The record-setting performance was one of 6 individual victories for the league athletes. Hanks also won the 200 meters with a PR time of 21.91 seconds, while 4 Little Four athletes won events at the Class A Smaller Schools NCS Championships in Santa Rosa. St. Bernard's senior Layla Florvillis placed first in both the girls' high jump and 100-meter hurdles, while her teammate Colton Hall won the boys' discus. Ferndale junior Anthony Casso also placed first in the boys' 110-meter hurdles. In local golf, meanwhile, McKinleyville senior Jake Gardner has announced that he will continue his playing career at the college level after committing his future to Simpson University in Reading. Gardner capped an impressive high school career this spring by winning the HDNL title and becoming the first McKinleyville boy to do so since Cody Bates back in 2012. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, Cal Poly Humboldt announced the 2025 Hall of Fame inductees. The new class includes Lumberjacks basketball legend Fred Hooks, who helped lead the team to a West Region title and national Final Four appearance in 2004. Longtime Lumberjacks equipment manager Monty Cook also will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, along with former quarterback Blake Moorman, who played for the Jacks in 2005 and 2006. The new class will be inducted in a ceremony in October. And that's this week's Caymud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineers, Michael McCaskill and Dennis Marr. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, Elise Cox, and Kennedy Cuello. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.